Oh, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Under the Wire, your home for censored and suppressed information about vaccinations and health. I am very blessed this evening to be joined by George Della Pietra from Safe Blood in Switzerland, and also Christina Terzic. Is that how you say your last name?
And say it like that, that's fine.
I'm slaughtering both of their names. I do apologize. From Safe Blood in Australia, welcome. This is an issue that I think everybody has been asking questions about over these last couple of months. How can we be sure that the blood that we receive, if we need a transfusion, is going to be safe, if it's not going to be contaminated or tainted from the vaccine or other things? So we're going to take a bit of a deep dive into that issue tonight with the two of you. And I really am grateful to you for coming along this evening. So, George, let me start with you. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and what made you decide that you wanted to look into this issue? I'm assuming you founded Safe Blood. Would that be correct?
Yes, Meryl, that's right. I founded Safe Blood Donation about 1.5 years ago. The idea was about 2 years in my head. And the reasons are many, actually. If you ask for my background, I have been a journalist for about 15 years. So, and I was a journalist at a time when journalists were able to say the truth. Actually, there was no censorship, anything. We could just say what we found out and we could ask questions, which is now not possible anymore, obviously. So this was one thing. Then I was also a naturopath for many years. I studied all kinds of mainly natural healing methods, Chinese medicine, and you name it, for about 20 years. And then I had a clinic, a naturopathic clinic, for 20 years in Switzerland, where I was specialized on virus, bacteria, and vaccination damage. Bingo. So I had actually, since I do a couple of other things, I'm a musician, I wanted to retire and only do music anymore. But what happened is that 2 years ago, I've seen there was a fairy tale coming up with a virus which escaped from a market in a place in China, which was immediately very suspicious. So I started to inform myself, and I found something very bothering, that the information I found, they are not to be found anymore on the mainstream media or anywhere in the newspapers. You have to look in the internet and you have to grab very deep, but then you find totally different information. So one thing is, I was really bothered about what's going on, that information is not information anymore. And then I was alarmed by this so-called pandemic of the century, which it later turned out definitely not to be. And really alarmed and put into action I was when the first vaccines were rolled out. So we have a new technology, which is mRNA technology, never done before. We have a new vaccine within only 1 year, ready to be rolled out, no clinical trials at all. We have a clinical trial right now in the whole world with everybody being part of it. So this was like, hooah, we have to do something. And then I was looking around, is anybody else taking care of it worldwide? At that time, unfortunately, nobody was. And even though I'm by nature a very lazy person, I had to say, no, let's do something. Because a later stage was when I found out that the particles of the mRNA vaccinations, they stay in the blood for a, let's say, unknown time. At that time, we were thinking maybe a month or two. In the meantime, we know they stay some forever. So then I said, okay, wow. What if you get a blood transfusion, then we really have a problem. So on one side, I'm a freedom fighter all my life, but in this case, I knew we have to fight for health freedom again, because it's taken away. We don't have the choice. And this is why immediately I started to do something. And the idea was to make a network, a worldwide network, right from the beginning, of people who are donors and receivers of unvaccinated blood. But this is only one part, which we will talk later about.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you so much. And I love what you said about journalism because I also studied journalism. And I remember there was a time when journalism was about research and about reporting fairly and without favors so that you could actually inform the public about what was happening. And now it's not at all that way. And it's quite serious because journalism is very powerful, and too many people believe everything they read, hear, and see. And I think we need to be more discerning. So good on you, George. That's fantastic. Christina, I'd like to go to you for a minute if we can. You're a mother of young children,
I
incredibly busy, and yet you have just recently decided to join George and to actually start a branch of Safe Blood in Australia. Why did you feel it was important to do that? What motivated you?
I think the biggest thing for me was, I mean, over the last, I keep going to say 2 years, but it's now almost 3 years that we've been fighting against these mandates and all of this corona stuff. I lost my job at Woolies. I had issues and police called on me at work for not wearing masks. I dealt with a whole bunch of stuff. I was in the freedom fighter movement in rallies and all that kind of thing, and everything sort of died down and kind of went back to normal. But I always knew that things weren't going back to normal. There was a lot more that was still to come. And then earlier this year, I fell pregnant, and I had this feeling about, oh my God, if I'm giving birth and I lose a lot of blood or something and I need a blood transfusion, what am I going to do? Because I don't want vaccinated blood. I've fought this hard. I've gone this long. I don't want anything to happen to me or my baby. So I started searching for things, and I came across Safe Blood and contacted George, and we were sort of on and off contact for a while, and then just sort of recently we started a Telegram chat. George created one with a few people who had contacted him that wanted to be part of it. And yeah, we just had a bit of a discussion, and people put their hands up to do a few things, but no one really said that they would be the lead to bring things over in Australia. So I just said, okay, no one else is doing it. It's super important. We need to do this. So we've got a small team. I think there's about three or four of us that are chatting constantly. But yeah, I just said it needs to be done. So I'll just find the time to do it.
So both of you had the same situation. You waited for someone to do something and nothing happened. So you decided that you were the ones who were going to do it, which is, I think, the way that most of these organizations end up starting. I know that the AVN started in very much the same way. So, it's great. It's really good to see that. That people power, which is so strong, is coming to the fore. But I guess you do probably need a lot more help, and we'll go into that a little later on in the conversation. So I have looked over the Safe Blood website. Now there's two: there's safeblood.net and safeblood.au. AU is the Australian website. And one of the things I found, and I don't know who wants to handle this, I'll kind of throw it up, and whoever wants to talk about it can talk about it. You talk about donated blood and how it is cleaned of impurities after it's been collected. And what I want to know is, and I think what a lot of people want to know is there any way to remove the lipid nanoparticles and the spike protein from the blood of someone who has received the experimental COVID jabs? I'm not going to call it a vaccine because it's not. I don't know who wants to handle that one.
I'll let George do that one.
Okay. You've been
Okay, you
elected.
start with the toughest question at all. That's
I'm
good. So
sorry.
we're right into it. But it's a very important one.
Okay, go
It's
ahead,
really an
George. Sorry.
important one because one thing is, of course, as a naturopath, I'm used to deal preventive. Prevention is always what I want. So I want to people prevent from getting the jab, whatever we call it, right? But there are 80% of the population, they already have it. So I don't want to just leave them out. So our main focus will shift in the future from prevention to cure. So we need to find a way to get rid of these nanoparticles, of these spike proteins, even the, other things. There are tons of things which are in the blood, unfortunately, which are not declared being part of the GEPs, and they stay in the blood. So there are a couple of ways to get rid of these things, but I have to say very clearly that for right now, for the time being, there is no enough documented way to get rid of all of these things.
Right. So when the Red Cross says that they have actually been cleaning the blood, they're cleansing, I think they use the word cleansing the blood, they really can't cleanse the blood at this point in time of the components of the experimental COVID jab. And therefore, they will be, those components will be in the final blood product that gets transfused into people who need blood. Is that right?
They don't even try.
No,
they don't even try because they say it's not dangerous.
And that's exactly right. And that's what on their Australian Lifeblood website, that's exactly what they say. Like, there's even a question on their fax that is still like, even if I haven't been vaccinated, can I donate? And they're like, we recommend that you get vaccinated before you donate. So it's not even a thing that they're considering. They direct you to the Federal Health website, which tells you that everything's safe and effective and it's totally fine.
And they would know, right? Because they've studied this. No, they haven't. And I'm glad you brought up the Australian Red Cross website, because there was something else that I saw. I think it was on their Facebook page, I'm pretty sure. Someone asked a question about whether it was possible to get blood from someone who hadn't been jabbed, that someone was concerned about getting the jabbed blood. And the answer was that there's nothing to worry about because there's no live virus in the blood. But would most people really be concerned about the live virus, or would they be concerned about the other parts? Because, I mean, the jab doesn't have a live virus. It only has spike protein, which is just a protein from the blood. From the COVID virus, supposedly. So, is that really the thing that people are concerned about when you have spoken with people? Are they concerned about live virus in the blood?
From
not
their
at all.
Emails
they're
and
concerned about all the other things, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it.
And the interesting thing that I discovered as well, sorry, I'll just throw in quickly, was that initially when the vaccine started rolling out, they actually had a 7-day waiting period for people to donate blood. They had to wait 7 days from their last COVID vaccine. It's now 3 days because they now know that the side effects occur within 3 days, and that's it. So I was like, okay, so what happens if someone experiences side effects after those 3 days and they've donated blood? And on their fax, again, another thing it says, to contact them so they can assess the situation and hopefully stop the blood being sent to a hospital for donation.
Okay, that's interesting. First of all, the 7 days and the 3 days, that sounds incredibly arbitrary to me. Like, you know, we're just going to pull a number out of the air. Seven sounds good. But if someone reacts, is that a sign that their blood is not... I mean, is the reaction in the blood all the time, or is it in the body tissues? Is it in the brain? Why are they saying that if someone reacts, then there's a problem? That to me is very strange and unscientific, but
doesn't make sense.
Funny
that. Well, Christina was researching, right? You were looking through this website forward and back, and I did the same, of course, 1.5 years ago. The first thing I did was to approach the Red Cross and ask them, do you differentiate between these two types? And they say, no, we will never do this. There is no reason to do it. If they would do this and would have done from beginning, we would not be needed right now. We could all go home and say, that's fine, they do it. But they will never acknowledge that there is or has been at any time a problem with the blood of the vaccinated ones.
Well, the Red Cross actually has a history in this area, because there was a scandal in Australia, and I'm not sure if it happened in other countries as well, But in the 1980s, the Red Cross did the same exact thing, where they refused to screen blood for the presence of the HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. And it is estimated that thousands or tens of thousands of Australians died as a result of that. And I don't know if that's true, but that is the estimate. And they had to pay huge compensation for not screening the blood for the presence of HIV. They are making the same mistake again. And one has to wonder, you know, if you don't learn from your mistakes, you're just going to keep doing them over and over again. When you and I make a mistake, we may, lose some money or break something, but we're not going to kill thousands of people. When the Red Cross makes a mistake of this kind, it is very possible, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it is very possible that disability or death could be the outcome. And, you know, why should we trust them when they did this in the past? Why should we trust them now? Do you think they're a trustworthy organization?
The first thing we learned is that we cannot trust anybody anymore. Mm-hmm. Any organization, any media, any politicians, trust is gone. Now we have to find facts and build a new trust based on facts.
Yep. Do you think that's actually a positive thing? When people can't trust the people who we consider to be authorities any longer, what do you think will happen? Will they start to actually become better informed themselves, or will they feel lost? What do you think will be the outcome? Have you been seeing changes like this from people who've contacted either one of you?
Do you want to go, well, George?
Not in my case. Yes, I start first, and then maybe you add some. People who get to us, they send us emails, they are desperate. Because they have, for instance, a surgery coming on, or even give birth. I had an email yesterday from an American. She said, I want to get pregnant, but I don't even want to get pregnant if I may have a cesarean later and have to get blood from a vaccinated. So I said, this is far away, don't worry too much. We also have to make sure we keep a positive approach. I fear is not really a good thing. It will damage our immune system. So let's keep a positive approach. But people are desperate. They say, my father has a surgery in 2 weeks and he will need blood. So what can I do? And I have to tell them, unfortunately, right now, the only thing you can do, you go to the United States, to Mexico, to Africa. Right now, we're establishing medical tourism to Dubai and Thailand, which is the most interesting for Australia, I think. So they just have to go somewhere. So I don't think there is a lot happening in the society change right now. Right now it's desperation for the ones who are the ones which really suffer from it, while the other 80%, they think, what is wrong? Everything is okay. What are you talking about? Because the vaccinated ones, they don't worry about anything. That's unless it. They get the fourth jab and start to feel unwell suddenly. But this change may come, but it takes a while.
It's interesting what you said. So the United States, you can actually choose to get blood from an unvaccinated or an unjabbed person? And
yes,
and
there are
as well?
A few places in the world. Mexico as well. We're right now building up Mexico as major hubs, Dubai, Thailand, and then in Europe, for instance, it will be East Europe, which we are on, because in these places, or let's say the whole continent of Africa, you can bring your brother in as a blood donor, and they will even ask you, could you bring your brother, because we don't have enough blood. So they do, and in very, very good clinics, what the clinics in the West, in Australia tell you, no, for medical reasons, we cannot do this. Unfortunately, they lie to you, but we have alternatives. We can go to these places.
Right. So if you need surgery in Australia, pretty well, the best thing to do is to travel to Thailand or Dubai and get your surgery done there, because at least there you have a choice of getting unjabbed blood, which is interesting. And Africa is interesting too, because very few people in Africa have actually taken the jab. I think the estimate is something like 4% across the whole continent. Some countries may have higher rates, but it's not something that has been well accepted there. And that is interesting that they're allowing that. What do you think, George? Why Why is there this effort to prevent people from choosing the type of blood that they will get if they need a transfusion?
Well, since there is no medical reason, then there must be another reason. So there must be an agenda behind the whole thing. If you want the whole world to be vaccinated, then this is the way to do it. The ones who did not decide to take it in the first place, so let's give it to them through a transfusion. Because again, there is no medical reason to deny an autologous transfusion a direct. No medical reason at all.
Right. So, there's no added risk if someone decides now. Autologous means that you are actually banking your own blood in advance so that when you need it, you can receive it, or a transfusion from someone who has not taken the jab. So, there's no added risk in doing this. In fact, with autologous transfusions, there's no risk of rejection at all because it is your blood. So that would probably be the safest type of transfusion. Would I be right in saying that?
Absolutely. And what is really bothering about this whole thing that a few years ago you could do this everywhere in the world, even in Australia. You could donate your own blood ahead of a surgery which is scheduled, for instance. You could get blood from one of your relatives. Everything was no problem. And suddenly it should be. This is why we are here. This is what we're fighting for. We just actually, we don't want something revolutionary. We just want the status quo how it was 10 years ago.
Right. And
Choice.
did these changes come in, Christina, at the time of the COVID jabbing? Did this start then?
I've been in the digging that I've done, the autologous transfusions apparently were revised in 2014.
Okay.
But when I've gone to look at the modules on the National Blood Authority website, it's still under revision for the preoperative side of things. But it says that it was revised in after a review of current evidence and international practice. So it seemed to be like a worldwide reason as to why it was revised and it was changed. So you can actually request an autologous transfusion, but it has to be in really exceptional circumstances. So if you have a very, 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 very rare blood type, or there's some other issues that are really exceptional, that is the only time that they may approve for you to be able to do that.
And
And the only is may.
it's just like the jab mandates. It is the government or the medical community or the pharmaceutical industry, and it's coordinated worldwide. As you're saying, these things have been basically decided upon internationally, and we've got this sort of harmonization going on where we're all choosing to play by the same playbook. But if you can mandate that someone must take an experimental jab into their body or lose their jobs or lose their rights as a citizen, then I guess the next logical step would be mandating everything that goes into their body, including blood. And it is yet another right that we are losing if we don't stand up. And that is the frightening thing, I think, about this. The fact that there is no logical, scientific, medical reason for this to be done, and yet it's being done. And we're just told suck it up and just accept it. Do we know, and again, this could be a difficult question, do we know at this point in time what is actually causing these blood clots? Or a lot of the people are saying they're clots, but they're actually not blood clots. People are finding these long, white, tuberous, sort of stretchy things coming out of people's veins and arteries. Do we know what in the jab is actually causing that, or is that still a mystery?
It's a mystery at some point. We have some hints. I mean, I started the whole thing because I did a lot of dark field microscopy, which is a way to check the blood. It's a fantastic way because it's a live analysis. You see it moving, and it's in a video, you see it best. You see how healthy blood looks like, and then you see on the other side how blood from vaccinated people looks like, which look. If I look at my clinic back, it looks very similar to a cancer patient in the last stage. So a young, healthy person getting a jab, suddenly finds himself or herself, even if it's a 15-year-old, with the same blood picture as a final stage cancer patient. This is highly alarming. This was the main reason why I started the whole thing. And but what it actually is it the spike protein? Is it any of these unknown additives which we have found in these pictures, which we don't know even what it is? Is it whatever? So we don't know. I think it's the as usual in life, it's the sum of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So these things are very well chosen from whoever wanted to have a result with. The result is done. They did a very great job, I must say. But what it is, no, we don't know. It's a sum of the whole thing. But this is not even the main concern. The main concern is that this whole thing alters the DNA. So we play God suddenly, and we alter the DNA, which never happened in history before. And not even this is the main problem. For me, the major problem is that after the jab, after the second, third, or fourth, your immune system is crashing. So even if we can say, yeah, okay, if the DNA is altered, never mind, humanity will go on somehow. But if after four or five shots, you get a mild flu and you die of it, then we have a real problem.
Yes, and that's being described worldwide right now, is this immune suppression. And we knew about this before the jabs came in, because they were working on SARS vaccines back in 2003. And one of the reasons why they never released them is because of this original antigenic sin, where people were actually having these problems after the jab. So all of a sudden we get this now and it's a big surprise. No, we knew this was going to happen. It's just crazy. So, you know, if I just got a couple of comments from people here who are watching, from Lee. My daughter is having surgery in 2 weeks. We put no transfusion and we just pray she doesn't need a transfusion. Lee, I'm assuming that you're in Australia. It's interesting that this is something that we can put on for surgery. Do doctors basically, if you say no transfusion and Christina, if you say no transfusion on that paperwork, will the doctors listen? And are there alternatives? I have heard that just taking, I don't know, I've heard coconut oil or something along those lines, or coconut water is basically something we can use. Are there alternatives that you're aware of that people can ask for if they don't want whole blood or plasma?
I didn't actually know that you could pick no transfusion on paperwork, so I've just made a note to look into that. As we mentioned before, it's only been a short period of time since I've been looking into this stuff, and there is a so I'll have a look at that. The only thing that I've been able to sort of find that people can look at now as a way to approach that kind of thing is called patient blood management. And it's something that came into effect after a review about what they say on their website is a benchmark study of blood use in adult patients undergoing elective surgery demonstrated three main predictors for red blood cell transfusions. The first one's preoperative anemia. The second one's a volume of surgical blood loss. And the third one, which I found very interesting, was failure to adopt a more restrictive threshold for transfusion. So they're obviously got these regulations where they need to be looking at other ways to avoid transfusion, whether that's a pharmacological way or that is an autologous transfusion or something along those lines. And they're just jumping straight in and just doing transfusions because that's just the easy way to go about it. And they shouldn't be doing that, unsurprising. So what you can actually do is pull that up, and that's the modules that I was talking about. There's all these modules about preoperative, postoperative, maternity, obstetrics, pediatrics and stuff that you can look at. They're all about 200 pages long, which is why I haven't read through all of them yet and don't have all the answers. But you can actually pull up your healthcare team if you're heading into surgery and say to them, look, there's this patient blood management. What I can do is put these links into the Safe Blood Australia Telegram group after we finish this.
Great.
And people can go on there and they have these different ways of blood conservation during operations and that kind of thing. And that's where that intraoperative cell salvage comes in. So if you known you're going to lose a lot of blood during your surgery, they can actually reutilize that blood and pump it back into you rather than it just going down the drain and them giving you a transfusion, which makes logical sense anyway. But these things that we
can do. I would love to add something.
Sure.
If I may, to this, because the very important question, but you can even either read you through these 200 pages or whatever, but you can make it much simpler. You can join Safe Blood, you can become a member, and when you're a member, on this mem card, there's a QR code. This QR code brings directly the medical professionals to your living will. And in this living will is stated black on white that you, for instance, you don't want this kind of transfusions, but even more importantly, what you asked, Meryl, what are the options? And there are options mentioned, and there are several options, which are several products which you can use to thicken the blood, to make sure that it does not is not so time sensitive anymore. And the main thing is what is called the auto transfusion, that during your surgery, your own blood is put back to your own blood circulation. And with this alone, we can prevent about 80% of transfusions in the first place. Wow. And this is the major thing which Safe Blood stands for right now. This is the most important thing. And the nice thing is we don't have to fight for it. It's in our living will. And when it's in the living will, the medical facility is obliged to do what is written there because it's legally binding. But let's say if you can, you have a planned surgery, of course, you talk about this with your doctor. And even if you're an anti-vaxxer and they don't like you because of this, you can say, no, never mind, I just want you to do the auto transfusion. You have the equipment ready. You learned it in medical school. You know how to do it. Just please do this. That's all. And so ask them nicely. And if they don't want, they say it's in my living will. It's on my member card. Just go for it. And then they have to do it. And they do it. So worldwide, we have several clinics who already operate under pressure of our members, say, please do this, and they do it. So a big, big thing. About the coconut oil, it's actually, there's no coconut oil, but coconut water was a discussion at some stage because it's similar. Or seawater, for instance. There are so many things which may even, let's say, if you're out in the wilderness and you need something, okay, then put it in instead of dying, might be try, I don't know. But I personally would probably not recommend it. But there are tons of alternatives which we really can do before we go to a transfusion, because a transfusion is always a risky thing, let's face it. We don't want to promote transfusions at all. The main thing we want is to avoid transfusion, because the best transfusion is an avoided transfusion.
Yep. And one has to wonder why the medical community is so resistant to actually doing something that, as you said, they were trained to do, they have the facilities to do. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but it seems to be a common thing with Western medicine is that there is what's called standard of care treatment. And that is whatever they've been told. If this happens, that's how you handle it. If this happens, then you have to do 1, 2, and 3. And there's no thinking outside the box at all. There's no dealing with your patient who's sitting right in front of you. There's only dealing with what you've been told you have to do. So it's quite concerning, I think, that so many doctors and so many people in the medical community won't agree to do something that someone believes is going to be good for themselves. They're the patient. It's their body. They should have the choice. So, yeah. All right. I'd like to go on a little bit and talk about the two cases that most people who are watching this right now would have heard about. And that's baby Alexander in the United States and baby W in New Zealand. I'm just going to put up a photo of baby Alexander. This is him before his surgery. George, I think you're quite well aware of the situation with baby Alexander. Would that be correct?
Yes, we have, of course, had several worldwide conferences about both of these cases, Baby Will and Alexander. And we have, for instance, in our Canadian team, we have a mother who went through exactly the same thing as baby Alexander. Her baby died in the end because of blood clots. And she decided then to go on, to inform, to fight, to inform other people to make sure that it will not happen to them. She is now part of our team in Canada, which I'm extremely happy about, because what are you doing as a parent if something like this happened? You break down and you don't get up anymore. She decided, I will take this as a lesson to warn everybody from being able to just never let it happen to my kids. That's the
And
main
that's
reason
the
we
way
did.
it should be. You know, so many people who are involved in this issue come from that same point. I know for myself, because I had a child who was injured by vaccines, that that's why I became so passionate about this. And I think that it's that kind of passion. I didn't know about the Canadian case. Baby Alexander is one that has happened fairly recently, just within the last few months. And from my understanding, if I have this wrong, please correct me, but from my understanding, he was born with several congenital problems. And one of them, which was his heart issue, would have required a transfusion during the surgery. And his parents wanted him to have a transfusion from a donor that they had selected who had matching blood types and had not gotten the jab. And the hospital said that it was going to be very expensive to do this and almost impossible. And they found out later on that wasn't the case at all. But before they had the heart surgery, he had another surgery that I think was on his esophagus. I could be wrong. And that surgery did not require a transfusion. And his doctor was already pretty pissed off, from what I understand, at the parents because they were trying to get their way. And that the surgery went really well. And he came out of it really well. And for some reason, without asking the parents' permission, knowing that they refused blood from someone who'd gotten a COVID jab, this doctor said that he needed a transfusion, and she gave him a transfusion from someone who had been jabbed. And within 24 hours, he developed a blood clot. And I'll just share this picture of him. This is, I think, about 2 weeks later. He actually ended up getting a blood clot that went from one leg right up into his heart, and it eventually killed him. And his parents, I believe, are taking legal action right now. This was in the United States, where, as you said, parents or people have a right to request blood that hasn't been jabbed. So why did this doctor do this, and how can parents prevent this from happening with their children?
Well, we had the case in New Zealand. I mean, Baby Will, they had a second opinion from another surgeon, actually, who said it's not even necessary to do this operation right now. They had it, but still, the problem in this case was so famous suddenly. To be honest, we did not give the government any choice than to react the way they did. So if they would have asked me first, I would have said, you know what? You just go to Mexico or to any other place. Keep below the radar and just save your child. That's what I've said. But there is always, of course, there are two hearts. One is you need to make these things public, otherwise nothing changes. But if you're a parent, you want to save your baby first, right? That's the first thing you want to do. And we were lucky in Will's case. In America, unfortunately, they were not lucky, but in Will's case, it turned out okay, even though we don't know yet exactly whether we really got unchecked blood, but we assume it's the case. But I would always say to parents, and in any case, not only these two cases, if you have a surgery coming on or you need blood, there are several ways to try it. If you know you're in a country or in a facility which will not allow you the choice, either you escape to somewhere else, or you try to talk them into, I don't know, you tell them you're a witness of Jehovah or whatever. There are always ways to find us. We had lots of members that were successful, because we have to find side doors and back doors. The front doors are locked. So let's find whatever is best in the individual case. So in the individual case, you look for your baby first, and in the second, then you approach the whole thing from making it public. But when you go public, you need very strong shoulders, I tell you.
Yes, and that was a picture of baby W following his surgery. And I have been told, and it's not necessarily guaranteed, but I've been told that because of the attention worldwide that was being paid to this case, the hospital did choose to give him blood from someone who hadn't received the jab. Like I said, there's no guarantee on that, but he certainly came through the surgery. He looks very healthy and very happy. And for those people who don't know his story, his parents wanted him to get unjabbed blood, and the hospital actually went to court, and they were granted guardianship of this child, so that they could give him the jabbed blood specifically. And then the night before the surgery, they came into the child's room and removed the child from the parents with, I think, 4 or 5 police officers. The whole thing was filmed. And, you know, the mother was, of course, crying. And they treated these parents like criminals. The mother wanted to spend that night with her son. As far as she knew, she may never see him again. And she was finally granted permission to go into the room and to spend the night with him. But she was not allowed to touch him, to hold him, to pick him up when he called for her. She was not allowed to go and hold him. She was told that if her eyes closed and she fell asleep for even a minute, that she would be out of the room, and that was it. The cruelty that with which these parents were treated, and the father was not allowed in the room at all. You know, it harkens back to the days of Joseph Mengele, as far as I'm concerned, this sort of treatment of parents. And we just have to wonder what is motivating these people. I don't know, and that's not even a question that I'm putting to you, because I know that you don't know either. But it's something that we have to ask ourselves. What is the motivation when someone is that cruel and that careless of the life of a beautiful child? George, I knew nothing about this child in Canada. Can you tell us a little something about what happened with this baby, if that's okay?
Actually, the mother decided she does not want to make it really public. Okay. She just decided she wants to work with us. She talks about it at any time if it's necessary. She will also go on a TV show soon and talk about it, but she does not really want it, because we have seen these two cases right now, and it's tearing our hearts apart, mm-hmm. right? If you hear what you said, which is exactly what happened, I also know it from firsthand. I mean, this is so horrifying. These are horror stories. It's really horror stories. So, and our approach from Safe Blood is, yes, this is necessary to need this, but we need a positive approach to the whole thing. It's okay, this is shocking us, but we need to look at positive things, even though, for instance, in baby Will's case, what you just said, yeah, we're happy he's fine. He did not hopefully get the vaccinated blood. But the story he is through, I mean, there are so many other things which are also important. It's not, okay, our first concern is here, we talk about the blood, but other things in life are even more important. I'm sorry, I have to remind you, because there are things which, like love and positive feelings, we can overcome many, many situations which without we simply cannot, right? So let's focus on these things. Let's try to get things better. We need the horror to wake us up. If it does, that was the purpose. But let's focus on the good things. For instance, like you said, Meryl, what are we doing with the vaccinated people? We have to help them too. It's the majority, and they are our family, our friends, and everything. We don't just give them up. We try to find solutions. So our focus in the future will definitely be the cure, the cleansing of the blood, and to make sure that this will never happen again.
Oh, yes.
What we saw in the 1930s already, and it happened again, unfortunately, so that obviously it's human, but we do our best that it does not happen again.
It's a very good reminder. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. And you're right, we do have to concentrate on the positive. I have someone here, Libby Lancaster, who says, yes, you can say no to transfusions. I'm a Jehovah's Witness, and we have a no blood card as well in our wallet. Maybe we should all become Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know. Just so we can make that choice legally. I think it's incredible that you can make that choice as a member of a religion, but not for any other reason. And the way I look at it is, we are told, yes, go ahead.
I have to say something to the Jehovah's Witness, of course. They state that they don't want transfusions, but they also write, you can let me die if I don't get a transfusion. If this is the option, then that's not really what I want, right? I want to give them the other options. And Jehovah's Witness, they have a whole system in place with their own doctors. They do this auto-transfusion and things, of course. They can go down with on a hemoglobin level up to 0.5, which is very, very low, of course, but they still survive. So they have a system in place. But if we're at the point that you have to be a member of a religious community to in order to choose what's going into your body, then something is terribly wrong, and we have to go against this.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say that with regular vaccines, with the childhood vaccines, we're always told not to worry about the side effects because they're one in a million. And we're also told that with transfusions, oh, it's one in a million risk. I mean, I've heard people say this. And even if it's one in a million, which we know it's not, it's much more common than that. But even if it's one in a million, if you are that one in a million, shouldn't you have the right to make that choice for yourself? The odds don't really matter if you are making the decision. But if you're not making the decision.
Sorry, I was just going to say, they constantly talk about this informed consent thing. You know, you're making your decision because you're getting informed consent. You're not getting informed consent. You're getting given a choice that if you don't agree with, you don't get any other option. So how is that informed consent?
It's like an election in a communist country. You have a choice of yes or no. That's it. It's not a real choice.
No, you have to say yes to this. Otherwise, you know, that's it. That's all you get to choose. Well, that's not informed consent. And that's what they always say with this sort of thing. And that's what they've been saying in things that I've been reading and stuff. It's not. If you don't get the choice to say, no, I don't want someone else's blood, I want to pick my donor, or I want to be my own donor, and they say, oh, no, you can't do that, you have to go with the Red Cross, but that's not informed consent.
It's not. No.
And that's what we need to work on changing.
That's right. And Australia is a signatory to the Nuremberg Code, so we should be able to abide by the terms of that code. And yet we act like it doesn't even exist. Christina, I want to ask you, I know you've only been working with Safe Blood for a short time, but since the Baby W and Baby Alexander cases have sort of, you know, burst on the scene, have you seen a huge increase in the number of people contacting Safe Blood to ask for help, to ask for advice, to get something from you?
I'm not getting a ridiculous amount of people contacting. There's a few that trickle in sort of on a daily basis that I'm replying to. And it is, like George said earlier, it's those people going, I have an operation coming up, please, can you help me? Or I'm pregnant and I need help. Can you help me? And it's horrible to have to turn around and say, sorry, there's nothing we can do apart from, you know, you become a member and you can do this and you can do that, but we don't have a blood bank right now where we can go, yes, we can help you and you can get unvaccinated blood. And I think that that's, you know, a really difficult thing. But I think tonight will probably bring a whole lot more people questioning it.
I hope so.
And contacting us. And, you know, I really hope that it makes a lot more people look at the website and become a member, because we really need to start building up that database for Australia. And it's like George has said many times, he says in his emails as well to people, you know, you have to take a stand, and to take a stand, become a member, because the more numbers we have, that's the more power that we have. And you need to take that step to do it and become a member. And we can go, okay, well, there's this many people in Australia out of a population of this many that want this. So you actually, government or healthcare or whoever we need to contact to do it, you need to actually turn around and make a change, because there's people power here, and that's the biggest thing in this. And I think that's been the biggest thing in the last 3 years, is that people power, and we need more of that.
Absolutely. And there is strength in numbers. How does membership work? How do people sign up to become a member? Do they go to Safe Blood AU to become a member?
Do you want to do that one, George, or do you want me
to? It's the only way. The only way to become a member is to go on the website. In Australia, it's .au, and then in every other country, it's .the ending of the country, or .net is always good. This is the only way. So don't write us an email, how can I become a member? Go to the website, register as a member. That's it. The only way to get in, and then you have to answer lots of questions about your whole health history and things like these details. Where do you live? You even have to upload an ID card that we make sure that you are a real human being, because we don't want moles in our midst. So it's quite a process, and it's the only way to become a member there. And I have to say, it's nice to become a member, because we do a blood bank, not maybe a blood bank at all, but we do other things. Like I said, the living will, which is already prepared, which is already in when you become a member. So there are a lot of reasons to join right now, mainly what Christina said. You can choose either to be one of the newsletter subscribers. We have 10 times more newsletter subscribers than members. These are the people, they just watch. They say, okay, yeah, let's have a look. And I think it's legit to say, we don't know this organization, and let's watch them for a month or two or three. Mm-hmm. But then stand up, take action, because only as members we can be a community which are strong, and we are worldwide. We are in over 80 countries right now, so we are really getting strong. And when I approached clinics 1.5 years ago for the first time to ask them, do you let the patient choose? Do you want to become a medical partner of us? They were just laughing, right? This was the Della Pietra, nobody from nowhere. And right now we are an organization, the discussion is on a much better basis right now. So we have to stand up and become strong. We're a worldwide community, and thanks to a godsend angel like Christina, we're getting it done now in Australia. And yeah, it's not about Australia only, it's about the worldwide thing. We have to change the whole world, not only a country.
Good on you, George. I have to say, what an amazing job you've done to get to 80 countries in less than 3 years. That's pretty incredible. And as someone who's been working with the Australian Vaccination Network for almost 30 years, I can absolutely affirm what you're saying. If I was just speaking to a politician or a news outlet as Meryl Dorey, that doesn't mean anything. But as the Australian Vaccination Network representing thousands of Australians, yeah, that has a lot more gravitas, I guess, to actually have them sit up and listen to what you're saying. And Christina, you were saying that, you know, you started this because nobody else was, and you had a Telegram channel where a lot of people said they wanted to help, but you really didn't get the actual hands-on help that you require. What is it that you need people to do? Because maybe if you can tell people now something specific that you need help with, and I'm sort of springing this on you, so I'm sorry about that, but if there's something that you need help with, you know, do you need help with websites? Do you need help with putting out a newsletter, with writing letters, with making phone calls? What is it that you need people to put their hands up to, and how can they contact you to do that, to volunteer?
Basically, like, I mean, as an example, we've got 30 people that have been added to an admin Telegram chat to help, and there's probably four of us that are doing anything within that chat. So I guess just the biggest thing is, sort of, George looks after all the websites and that kind of thing. The biggest thing I think for us will be having state representatives. The more traction this gets, it's going to be a lot for one person to manage, you know, all email inquiries and that kind of thing for the entire country. So we've got a few states now that are managed from the four of us that are in that chat, that are willing to help. But if anyone has some free time from WA, Tasmania, Northern Territory, South Australia, I think we've got Vic, I'm ACT, and New South Wales, sort of covered, And we can, like, we can manage that, but I just think as this gains more traction, we need people that are willing to put in some time to help in any way. And if you can shoot me an email and just say, look, I've got time to help with this, I want to help. Otherwise, the biggest thing that people can do is, like we were saying before, is become a member.
Yep. And how do they send you that email? Is it on the website? Do they go to safeblood.au and there's a contact form or something?
Yes. If you have a look at the safeblood.au and then you can go to the country updates, there's an Australia. So if you go to news and then there's Australia there. So that's got the latest updates about what's happening here. It's got my direct contact details as well.
Okay. So I see.
And then there's also the facts page too, which covers most of the generic questions that we get emailed. So I ask people, please, in the first instance, to have a read of that Australia page, have a read of that fact. And then if you've still got a question following on from that, then send an email through. And I think the biggest thing from that is what we've just said before is, you know, we're not a blood bank. Not something that you can just donate to us at the moment and we manage the blood, which is probably the main question that I've been getting from people is, where can I give my blood? I'm unvaccinated. And you can't do that at the moment. You can go and donate to Lifeblood, but apparently 90% of Australians have had at least one vaccination. So the likelihood of you getting unvaccinated blood is very minimal. Yeah. But that's basically become a member. If you've got free time to help, you know, I can add you to the Telegram chat. We can start delegating work because I think, you know, you've got 64,000 people that follow you on Facebook alone. I think if plenty of people are seeing this and people have been concerned about this over the last period of time since COVID hit or even before that with any vaccination, then, you know, please let us know and we can find something to do, I think, as time progresses.
I think this is such an important effort. And, you know, as someone who's been a volunteer for a long time, I really salute both of you for your dedication to doing this. And I also know the toll that it takes, especially when you have young children. And I mean, it's a cliche, but many hands make light work. So if anyone watching this can join, then please do. And if you want to contact Christina on the safeblood.au, just go to that Australian section and you can see her phone number, her email address. And please, you know, a couple of hours a week is probably a fantastic amount of time that you can give. And almost anyone can do 2 hours a week. So, you know, we need to save more baby Wills, more baby Alexanders. We need to make sure that people have the choice when it comes to these issues and that we're not being forced to take a procedure that could harm or even kill us. Nobody has the right to do that to us. Nobody. You know, I think that both of you have just been amazing and founts of knowledge. Before we finish up, George, is there anything else that you'd like to add that we haven't covered tonight that you think is important for people to know?
Yes, I would like to actually, because if I look at headlines, we were in the headlines in the press, in mainly American press or international news portals, and I always see the headline, blood bank. And this is a common mistake. We're not a blood bank in the first place. Yes, it will be nice to have a blood bank in the future for the rare emergency cases when we really need it. But we stand for actually something totally different. First, we stand for information, number one. We want to inform people about the risks of these jabs, right? So, and then they, based on the real information, which they don't find on the media, they can then make a decision. Do they want them or do they not want them? And if not, then they find out, oh, we don't even have a choice. So we have to inform people and then make sure they stand up. So this is the main thing. Then the second thing is we want to have a worldwide network to raise awareness about what's going on in the world, which is right now. Yes, we're focusing on the blood. This is why we call it Safe Blood. But it's much more. It's about health freedom in general. So if you join Safe Blood, it's not about to make sure you get your blood ready when you need it. It's about changing a system which is unfortunately totally out of control, you, I mean, health always used to be on the side of people, right? But if now, like today, politicians tell the scientists what to do, politicians tell the journalists what to say, then we have a bigger problem to address, which we are addressing. And blood is just a pressing issue right now because we have only so many percents of people with unvaccinated blood left. So we have to make sure we preserve this somehow. But so the these are the main, my main concerns why I founded Safe Blood. And for the members by themselves, I would say the main focus is right now, as we talked about, on preventing transfusions by giving them the tools. And we have these tools on the website. So if you remember, you just click plug, 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 you have your living will, everything is ready. And to inform them, hey, you have these rights. It's not just the Jehovah's Witness who can say no. Everybody can say no. And we give them the options how to do it. So please don't send Christina an email, where can I donate blood? Just read yourself through it. Everything is clearly written. Don't call her. I have hours of phone calls every day. People ask me things which are on the website. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, we need to take responsibility.
It's a lot of information.
Yep. For getting educated. Yep. That's right.
Yes.
Stand education up. Is key. That's it. Yep. Christina, how about you? What's your closing message for Australians?
I think that we've pretty much covered everything that I can think of from my end. But yeah, I'm just really glad to be doing this for God, this sounds really lame, but doing this for Australia. No, I think it's hugely important. I'm really, really proud to be working with George and all the work that he's done. And I think that it's just massive that we need to get this done for all of us, because it's even like, Meryl, when you and I were talking, having a chat last week, and we both had the realization of even breast milk being donated with someone, you know. And it's not, like George said, it's not just blood, it's just that freedom of healthcare encompassing everything, and that comes under that banner as well. Like, it's just, it's huge and it's scary that we don't have that choice.
You just made me think of something else that I never thought of, which is donated semen for people who are trying to fall pregnant and doing IVF. I mean, that would yes, George, sorry, I just thought of it.
We're already on this. Oh. Will be launched in January. It's called safereproduction.net. Because yes, it's absolutely necessary. I had it on the table since the beginning, but the blood issue was first, but it's ready. We're ready to go in a few weeks.
More points than a porcupine. And you know what? It'll probably extend even further in other areas that we don't even think about right now. But yeah, it's a very important area of activism, and I'm so glad that you guys are doing it. And I know the people who are watching it are glad as well. For the people who are watching this, can you please help us avoid the Facebook censorship by sharing this as far as you possibly can, not just on Facebook, but on other platforms as well. And this will be up on Brighteon, BitChute, Odyssey, and Clout Hub as well. And tomorrow this will be on your most popular podcast stations as well, through Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Cast, and several other podcast platforms that I cannot for the life of me remember right now. So be sure to share this, be sure to listen, and be sure to join Safe Blood. Yes. Were you going to ask?
If anyone has had any success in pushing for like an autologous blood transfusion or having a supplying their own blood donor, can you also send me an email just so I can talk to you about how you approached it, how it worked with your healthcare team and that kind of thing? Because that would actually be really interesting to have that information too.
Yes, that's a great idea. That sort of experience should be shared so that other people can use it and replicate it. Yeah. Fantastic. George, were you going to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to thank you, Meryl, because without people like you, the message is not heard, right? So thank you very much for what you're doing. You're an exception. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Bless you both. And a good night to all from Under the Wire. And we will be back next week as well. Thanks a lot. Take care. Thanks. Have a good night, all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.